Hello, and welcome to the Nutrition and Life Podcast. This is where we look at various nutrition and fitness-related topics through the lens of application. We want to give you practical takeaways so that you can create your healthiest, best self backed by knowledge. Now, onto the episode with your host, Coach Lisa.
Hello, and welcome back to the Nutrition and Life Podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and in today's episode, we're doing a Q&A. The one that we did a little while ago was super popular, and I sent out a question on Instagram and got lots of great questions from training to nutrition to personal development. So I'm excited for today's episode. Before we get into it, I will give you a very brief update, not as long as I did the last time, just talking about training, really. So as most of you or many of you know, I have been doing a gaining phase over the last year and a half, actually longer since that now, September 2022, that's essentially when I started. And since then, I was in a calorie surplus for 7 months, then maintained over the summer in Europe last year, and then now have been building again since September or October last year in a smaller surplus, and now dropping back into sort of a maintenance over the summer. Usually I just really want to feel a little bit lighter in a bikini, you know. I think most people can probably relate to that, and it actually feels quite nice, because sometimes if you have done a gaining phase, sometimes you know that you feel fluffier from time to time, that it's actually almost a chore to eat a little bit more from time to time. So I have been in slightly lower calories again for, let me think, a week now, a little bit over a week, and I already feel lighter. and I feel like, at least it's my own perception, I feel like I look a little bit leaner already also. So anyway, that's what's happening with me. I'm still doing the same sort of training split with 3 lower body days, which I'm still loving and recovering from somewhat nicely. Of course, as we progressively overload as the weeks go on, there will always be weeks where we're a little bit more sore, and I'm trying to manage those as best as possible. I'm currently not going to the sauna, although there is a sauna included in the gym, but it's just so much hotter and I really don't feel like going to the sauna. On the contrary, I have actually signed up to do some ice baths by the beach on Saturday, which we'll see how that goes, since I also don't really like the cold, but I know how beneficial it is and I just want to give it a go. But yeah, anyway, so that's what's happening. And with the upper body, I'm continuing to do a shoulder day and a back day, and really, really, I feel like every week I'm learning something new when it comes to my back, and I never knew how, I can almost say how bad I was at activating my back, but it is getting better and better. So never think that you know it all. That's all that I'll say in regards to this. But let's get into the first question, and it is actually a training question. So the question is, I only have 3 times 45 minutes per week available for training. I want to build muscle in the most well-rounded way possible. What exercises would you definitely include in my full body training split? So firstly, I love that you're doing a full body split. That's absolutely what I would advise with just training 3 times per week. We want to hit each muscle group at least twice per week, and this is simply the best way to ensure that we're doing that. With your time constraints also, I would focus on fewer exercises and trying to do more sets of them. So perhaps 5 times 10 or something like that, rather than spending or wasting too much time on changing the equipment. And you could also consider doing some supersets. So for instance, pairing a lower body exercise with an upper body exercise, so that the lower body more or less gets rest while the upper body is working, and vice versa, just in order to save time also. I would probably also work with higher rep ranges and lower rest time, so more like a minute type of rest, again, to save time. I also wouldn't spend too much time on an elaborate warm-up. Yes, an activating set, maybe 3 to 5 minutes of something where you include plank, side plank, swimmers, that type of thing, to warm up the body core, really, or to activate the core more or less. Then when it comes to the specific exercises, I would absolutely include some kind of squat regular squat, hack squat, or a leg press as an alternative if you have back issues. But that's what I would absolutely include. I would also absolutely include a hip hinge movement. So a deadlift, probably a Romanian deadlift or a good morning, but probably more a Romanian. Also a lunging movement. So that could also be a step up, depending, you could vary that, but I kind of count a step up towards a lunging movement, and then something in a sumo stance just to hit those, that glute medius also, or you could do abductions as your activation warm-up paired with the planks, for instance. That would be another alternative, or doing them at the very end of your workout. But you do want to make sure you have something where you're doing an abduction or where you're doing something in a sumo stance. Now, when it comes to the upper body exercises, absolutely making sure you have plenty of pulling movements in there. So something like a row, it can be a bent over row, various variations. It doesn't really matter what form. The muscle doesn't necessarily know the exercise, it just knows the movement pattern. And then you could also, or I would also include an incline press, not a regular press, but an incline press, a dumbbell press, just a regular one, as well as lateral raises, as well as face pulls or reverse flies. Those would be sort of the musts. And, you know, filling up your training schedule like that and doing 5 sets of 10 for each one of those is going to fill up the time pretty quickly. I wouldn't necessarily put in a specific ab exercise, as in like crunches or sit-ups. You could do a finisher of those if you really wanted to, but I would say that, especially if you're also doing the squats and deadlifts and so on, you're already training your core quite well. If anything, I would focus more on the back, so more things like a swimmer or did I mention pull-ups already? I'm not actually sure. If you're not doing pull, if I haven't said it yet, then definitely doing some sort of pull-up or lat pull down. That would be the other thing that I would absolutely want to have in there. Now, if I know you said you want to have the most well-rounded muscles possible, so we're not even talking about cardio here, which is absolutely fine as long as you're, you know, maybe walking 8,000 to 10,000 steps per day. But you could put in a very short, I'm not going to call it HIIT finisher, but cardio finisher, in the sense of 3 times 30-minute sprints on an air bike, or 2 times 250-meter row for time, something like that, just to really elevate your heart rate at the very end. And then maybe 1 or 2 minutes of just down regulatory breathing. So all in all, with warm up and the cool down, that would, if you included a 2-3 minute cardiovascular finisher also, we would be looking at like 10 minutes for that aspect, and then you have 35 minutes for the actual strength component. I also wanted to say, I think it's awesome that you're, you know, making the most out of that time. Some people might even say, oh, 45 minutes, what can I even do in that time? But something is better than nothing, and sometimes less is actually better than more. For instance, our coach Tammy, and I know she won't mind that I shared this, but she was doing a 4 or 5 day training program. The fifth day was optional, and it's a very high volume program. I love this program. It's a program that I have been following for a long time also, but it is very high volume, and particularly because it's very big on lower body movements, it's hard to recover from sometimes. And she had a very stressful time in her life also, a lot of work stress, a lot of personal stress, emotional stress, all these sort of things. Sleep started to decline, and we noticed that she wasn't as excited to train anymore. She was more sore, all these sorts of things. And so at some point I was like, I think we should probably switch training program, maybe to a 3 or 4 day program. And at first I could tell she felt a little bit like a failure, like she felt failed the program. And that is the furthest from the truth that it could be. She put in such a good effort, but we have to understand that more volume is not always better. So when we're talking about training volume, meaning the overall repetitions and sets and everything else over the course of the week, there is such a thing as the optimal recoverable volume. This will be different from person to person. This will be different throughout your life. throughout your year, you're not going to recover as well from a certain volume when you're 20 or when you're 40 or 50 as when you were 20. And you're not going to recover from the same volume as well in a week where you have hardly anything to do and you are on vacation and your mind is in a great place as when everything is in chaos. So acknowledging that is super important. Above that, we have the maximal recoverable volume, which is actually different to the optimal recoverable volume, meaning sometimes we do more than we actually need to when we only just sort of manage to recover from that. Above that, we have what is called non-functional overreaching. So meaning we're doing too much that it's actually hurting our gains. We could actually be gaining more from doing less. And above that, we have overtraining. Below the optimal recoverable volume, we have a volume which is like minimal adaptive volume or something like that. So you're still making progress, but you could be doing more. And below that, we have sort of the maintenance volume. And below that, you have volume where you're not achieving anything. You know, if you're training once every 2 weeks, you might still be losing muscle mass, actually, looking at the whole picture. So it is about finding out where is this volume at for you at which time. And if we're in the non-functional overreaching, so doing too much, or if we're even on the maximal recoverable volume, I mean, you're not going to notice any physical symptoms in that place. But for Tammy, we were definitely in a place where we were not adapting to her training anymore. So pulling back to a 3 or 4 day program, she felt excited going into the gym again. She felt like she was making progress. Her weights were going up. She could, you know, it was completely different. So don't be afraid to drop down your volume. I know that that is hard because it's hard for me also, but just recommending that. Okay, next question. What is your recommendation when it comes to saturated fats? Do you give clients an instruction on how to keep it low, or is that not something that you worry about? I love this question. Okay, so as most of you know, we encourage macro counting. That includes tracking your fats. And within that, we won't specifically say, hey, your overall fat target is 60, but I want you to keep your saturated fats under 20 or something like that. Most cases, we won't say that unless someone comes to us saying they have issues with their cholesterol, they want to lower their cholesterol, all that kind of stuff. But simply by giving the recommendation of, hey, 80-90% whole foods, and by giving a particular fat target and not just saying, just track your calories, it doesn't matter if you consume 200 grams of fat and it doesn't matter where that comes from, it's certainly not what we do. So we do look at our clients' food logs on a regular basis, not every week, if they are clients that have been with us for 6 months or more. It really depends, but especially in the beginning, we look through someone's food log. And if in there, I would see a ton of butter, a ton of bacon, a ton of super fatty cuts of meat, which is unrealistic because then they would probably not be able to stay in their calorie budget or in their fat budget anyway. But, you know, if I would see that, I would say, hey, can we switch that to olive oil? Can we switch the fatty cut of XYZ to chicken breast? So definitely making some recommendations on that front. Overall, when it comes to saturated fats or when it comes to fats overall, so we have the trans fats, which we definitely want to limit or cut out as best as possible. Those would be present in things like frozen pizza or cookie dough that you buy frozen, anything that's sort of manufactured, processed, and is meant to last for a long time probably contains trans fats, so man-made sort of fats. We have saturated fats, which for a very long time, especially following, I think it was called Angel Keys, something study, what was it? Can't think of it right now. But anyway, where they sort of demonized fats altogether, and that really sparked the craze for low-fat everything. And then unfortunately, because of that, adding sugar to a ton of things and processing things way too much. So back swinging in that direction. And then, of course, we get the counter reaction once again, where paleo, keto, and all those things have become popular, which, you know, they have a place and a time in some settings. But that whole, hey, you can't have too many saturated fats, we also know that that is certainly untrue. Saturated fats are linked with coronary heart diseases, so we still want to limit those, essentially linked to those heart diseases by driving up the bad cholesterol. So anyway, we want to limit total saturated fats to about less than 10% of your total daily calories. So let's say if you are at about 2000 calories, that would mean about 200 of those maximally coming from saturated fats. That would in turn mean, yeah, you know, roughly about 20 grams, or limiting it to below 20 grams. So that's how you can think about it. And that's where tracking your food just in general comes in very handy, because otherwise, how do you know how much saturated fats you consume? But yeah, things better with better fats would be polyunsaturated, monounsaturated fats, so particularly, of course, omega-3s, which we want more of. But aside from that, when it comes to polys and monos, avocados, nuts, seeds, and yeah, there are some foods that are a little bit hybrid or controversial, like eggs, that do have saturated fats in them, but in moderation. Eggs are such a great, I'm gonna call it a superfood, super cheap, tons of micronutrients, high protein, and some good fats as well. So yes, don't be afraid of to eat whole eggs. What you should really be mindful of is those processed things, even if it is like deli meats, sausages, and just in general fattier meats, I would sort of limit. I guess what I wanted to say in regards to this too, our coach Allison, she has undergone her own personal lowering cholesterol journey and is always mindful of that very, very much so, mostly because I believe she has in her family familial hypocholesterolemia, so meaning that her whole family is prone to high cholesterol. And therefore, she has really been emphasizing or looking into that and being mindful and wary of that for a long time. And with her, she used to be vegan for a little while, I believe. And she said during that time, she did have the best cholesterol markers. Again, we need to look at the whole picture. Like, was she consuming enough protein during that time? I don't know. It was a while ago. Was she covering all her micronutrients? Otherwise, probably, because she educates herself. Other people that follow a vegan diet, you know, just living off of bread and pasta and maybe a little bit of vegetables here and there, are not going to hit all their micronutrients on a vegan diet. But nonetheless, this is something that she was very mindful of. And now, having reintroduced vegetarian products, so dairy products, and I do think she eats eggs and maybe even fish from time to time, I'm not sure. But her cholesterol is not as good as it was back then. So she added in more cardio again and did a lot of trial, and has given out some great recommendations. If you're interested, she wrote an awesome blog, which is up on our website. Please go check it out. I'm going to link it in the show notes, so you can have a read. Very highly, highly recommended. Okay, next question. I have a very hard time getting clear on my goal. On the one side, I want to be as healthy as possible and feeling great on a day-to-day basis. On the other side, I love feeling lean and the confidence I get from a more shredded look. How can I figure out what my goal should be right now? Well, this is great and sort of links in with what I was saying earlier about my periodization. I do think for most people, the year is actually set up in a great way where, you know, you have winter, you have summer, you have the phases in between. So why not use the phase in winter where you generally cover up a little bit more, where there are more holidays, where you probably don't mind being a little bit fluffier in order to build. I think long term, it can really work quite well doing a gaining phase from, say, September through to March, then doing a cut from March to May, and then maintaining from May through to September, or maintaining or cutting. Well, I wouldn't want to cut for that entire summer. I think most people are too busy in the summer also. And you shouldn't have put on that much weight during your gaining phase anyway. So nonetheless, that would be how I can imagine a lot of people could really long-term successfully build a beautiful physique. Beautiful. And in that quote-unquote gaining phase in the winter, you don't even have to put on, you don't have to put it, be in a huge surplus. It can just be like upper range of maintenance where you feel satiated, your hormones are good, your sleep is good, all these sorts of things. And you feel like you have a ton of training, your weight might be going up like a pound or maybe less than a pound each month, maybe even just half a pound or so each month over the course of these 6 months. So that would be like 3 pounds. And then you cut for very moderately for a month or two, and then you're feeling lean for the summer again. Not even aiming for a ton of drop, but really more focusing on how you're feeling. It's not so much getting the scale back down to where you were in September. That shouldn't be the focus. That would be sort of negating all your gaining efforts. We don't want that either. But yeah, so that would be a periodization. Now, when it comes to what you're actually asking, which I believe is how do I just gain clarity on anything? I think the hardest thing is being honest with yourself. And for that, we usually need time. We need time to listen to our own thoughts. And most people don't allow for that. Most people are entertained all day long, are on the go all day long, are listening to stuff all day long. Whenever they have a minute, they, you know, you eat, you listen to a podcast, you drive, you answer some phone calls, you are here. Like, and I get it. Like, I'm trying to be most efficient and filling up my time with all the things I want to do also. However, I also think we need to schedule time to regularly check in with ourselves for an emotional perspective, for reflection, for visualization of what you want. And that includes gaining more clarity about what you actually want. So for instance, if you are in between those two chairs that you just mentioned, you love feeling lean, but at the same time, you would like to build and know that you need to be a little bit more healthier and all that. What I would say is don't think of how you want to feel and look next month. Think of what does your physique look like in a year, 3 or 5. And then from that, if you're like, exactly as I am right now, that tells you, okay, you should be in a maintenance phase. If you can see yourself and like literally visualizing, closing your eyes, if you can see yourself with a bit more of a booty, with a little bit more definition in your arms, with whatever else, that tells you you need to go into a gaining phase at some point. Whether that's right now or next year or not, but it, you know, we're taking one decision at a time here. If you see yourself and you think this person has less body fat and is just generally lighter because you might have extra body fat at the moment, that tells you you need to go through some weight loss phases, right? So you see what I'm doing here. We're just visualizing the end as opposed to thinking, how do I want to feel right now? I know you said you love feeling lean and confident from a shredded look. Sure, we all do. We can't necessarily be super, super lean all year round. However, we can maintain lifestyle leanness and then have periods where we're a little bit fluffier and periods where we're a little bit leaner. And if we time them correctly, they won't seem so obvious to other people or even to ourselves. So I don't know if that was a good way to answer this, but I would just say create time to actually hear yourself think. And the other thing being that we all have people we admire, we look up to, we love their physique. And I think having role models is actually so great. Not necessarily having one role model or someone that we're like idolizing or something, but just seeing certain things in certain people and picking that out and acknowledging how cool that is and that we might want to have a certain aspect of that quality within us also. And that could be, or that also means that you have the potential for that within you. So if you are following someone on Instagram and she has this gorgeous physique and she's showing her transformation journey from having no booty, and I'm not talking about myself here, there's plenty of people that have way more impressive booty gains than I have had, but nonetheless, you know, like she might have had a journey where she was super skinny, a really dysfunctional relationship with food, and now a few years later she has a well-rounded physique, she is portraying how healthy she's eating, she is loving life, whatever, and you see that, you admire that, that means you have the skill, you have that potential, exactly that potential just with your body, for you, within you. So if you see that, recognize that that means it's possible for you, and all you need to do is take the according action steps towards that, because you can't say, I want that, and then do the contrary action steps. So let's say that was your goal, where you're saying, where you're acknowledging you are too skinny, you're constantly hungry, your hormones are dysregulated, blah, blah, blah. And you want to get to this and that point, but at the same time, you're spinning in circles, you're keeping on doing the same action over and over and over again. Clearly, you need to do something differently. Does that help? I don't know, hopefully. But going into our next question, I did really like that question, so thank you so much for voicing that, because I do think it's hard for all of us to sometimes find out what we want, especially if we have a lot of options or we feel like we have all the options all the time. So next question, what is your best advice for optimizing sleep quality? I make sure to get 8 hours of sleep quantity, but my Aura says I don't get a lot of restorative sleep, and that correlates with how I feel when I wake up. I take magnesium and ashwagandha before going to bed, and I've tried GABA, which didn't do anything for me. Any other tips? Wow, that feels almost like something I would write. So firstly, I thank you for all the explanations, because I like that you said your Aura says X and it correlates with how you feel. So you clearly are aware of the fact that that technology doesn't always say the truth, or doesn't necessarily always mean that it is true. I personally have had an Aura ring for, I think it was over a year, maybe a year and a half, and I stopped wearing it because I just felt like either it felt inaccurate, or it made me feel like my sleep was even worse than it was, or like it made me frustrated. So like, you know, sometimes you just can't sleep more. Like you said, you are in bed, but maybe you're in bed for 8 hours, but your sleep ring or tracker says you only slept for 5 or 6. And then I would get up and be frustrated and angry at myself, because like, why, body, why aren't you sleeping? So there's no point in that. That little rant here, but what I'm trying to say is, if we use these rings or these trackers, which can be super helpful, we need to make sure that we're doing it wisely by listening to how we're feeling first, and then looking at the data and just seeing it as data, as opposed to something that we should be basing our feelings on, in my opinion anyway. I love that you take magnesium. You could look into what form of magnesium you're taking, because of course if it's a citrate, it's not necessarily going to do all that much for sleep. If you want to switch to a complex, like some sort of mixture, excuse me, like the Bio Optimizer magnesium, which tends to be a great mixture, or other forms of magnesium like threonate tend to be, excuse me, I'm gonna have to drink something, tend to be a little bit more helpful for sleep. excuse me, I'm back. You could also consider taking a zinc in addition to that, just to help your body deal with the stress better. Ashwagandha, great. Not necessarily something that helps initiate sleep, but just simply helps with stress management. GABA, yes, for some people it doesn't really do anything. It is a neurotransmitter which your brain is just meant to release on its own anyway. I would absolutely not advise taking melatonin or anything like that on a long-term basis, taking that here and there if you're traveling or if you're adapting to a new time, that's fine. But otherwise, it is just usually way too highly dosed. The other things I would say, and you it sounds like you're already doing a lot of the right things, so you've probably thought of that, but nonetheless, I feel like I should mention it. We want to make sure room temperature is adequate, meaning usually lower than what we think, so sort of a cool room. You want to make sure you have a good mattress, a good pillow. You don't want to have any pets or children in bed. Making sure your environment generally is as quiet and as dark as possible. But the other things being, even if you didn't necessarily say that you have issues going to sleep, but nonetheless, doing something like meditation beforehand, doing a brain dump beforehand so that you like write everything out that's on your mind so that you're not waking up midnight thinking about a gazillion things or your to-do list tomorrow. That can be very helpful. And just in general, the meditation beforehand or having like a phone cutoff time can be also, really actually more helpful in keeping us in a deeper sleep than we think. We often think like, hey, I fall asleep just fine. I don't need to cut off my phone or my screen time or anything like that. It doesn't affect me. And the same thing with coffee. If we have coffee in the afternoon and we think, hey, it's fine, it's not affecting me because I can go to sleep, it still might affect your sleep quality. So I would always say cutting off caffeine intake like 8 hours before you go to sleep is probably a good idea. Caffeine tends to have a half-life of 6 hours. In most people, very person dependent, but that's sort of what they say. So I would make sure that at least 8 hours beforehand, you're not consuming any caffeine. You could also try just generally have like chamomile tea, other like essences or herbal oils or so are meant to help sometimes. But you know, those are the minor things. I would also make sure you're not drinking alcohol on a regular basis. Again, even though we actually feel like it helps us go to sleep, it normally does not enhance sleep quality. But it could also just be an indication that there is something wrong with your hormones, or not necessarily wrong. Sorry, I don't mean to like fearmonger here, but it could just mean that you might not have enough estrogen, or that your progesterone is all over the place or something. Like it can often, very often be a sign for a hormonal imbalance, whatever that might be. So I would make sure that you are getting blood work done on a regular basis. As my voice is fading here, I'm not going to continue with these other questions. I did have another two or three, but I'll probably save those for a future Q&A since you guys seem to like those. So thank you very much for sending in your questions. I hope that you enjoyed this episode, even if I just got around to answering a few. Give me any feedback if you have any additional follow-up questions in regards to those. And thank you so much for listening. Please make sure you subscribe, you rate the show, you share it on your social media. It is the best way to help us grow. And also, these episodes are now, as you might already know, on YouTube, so you can watch me talk or have a conversation with someone else. Or we also put out our cooking videos on there and other little helpful things. So just go and subscribe and support us. Thank you. Have a lovely rest of your day.
Thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, or share the episode on social. Very much appreciated. You can also follow us on Instagram at Nutrition Coaching and Life, or head to our website, www.nutritioncoachingandlife.com, where we provide more valuable content. Have a wonderful day. Now go out and work on your best self.